Welcome to Tribecast. I'm Forrest Walden, founder and CEO of Iron Tribe Fitness. And on this podcast, I am going to help you find your tribe and maximize your life. Welcome to another episode of Tribecast. Super excited today to sit down with my good friend, one of my mentors, and one of my coaches over the years, Michael Alasso. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Forrest. I'm equally excited to be with you.
So Michael is a director, an actor, a choreographer, a writer, a teacher, a coach, a singer. I mean, I'm sure I'm missing some descriptions here, but you do a lot of things when it comes to what you do professionally. And you, on your website, you say that you are a communication and awareness specialist. So we're going to get into what that actually means. You may, if you recognize Michael's voice, you might have seen him in Pink Panther 2, maybe Lady in the Dark, The Strangler's Wife. He's, as I mentioned, he's an actor. He's been in several movies. He's been on Broadway, a lot of things that we'll get into. But I want to start with my Michael Alasso origin story. Because it is seared into my brain, and I'm forever changed from this moment. So I was in a Vistage group, which is a CEO group that brings in speakers, and it's kind of a round table, about 17, 18 guys. And Michael was the speaker that day, and he's talking on communication and all the things that we need to do to be effective as CEOs. And we've taken this role as CEOs, so we don't have the opportunity to not be good and effective presenters. And several times during the event, he called me out for being on my phone. So this is a very small group. I have my phone in my lap. And the first time he called me out, I kind of, you know, yeah, okay, that was cool. Second time he called me out, he said, Forrest, are you with us? And I kind of looked up from my phone and, you know, acted like I was with him. He's like, you know, first time, Forrest, when I saw you, I thought maybe you're, you know, trimming your nails. The second time I saw you going down, I didn't know if you're playing with yourself or what's going on down there. And I just came to the conclusion that you're just not very interested in what's going on here. And I was like, oh my gosh, I just got called out. But it was totally appropriate, and you taught me a huge important lesson, which is consistent with every interaction I've had with you before or since then. And so anyway, I thought it'd be interesting, Michael, as just a start to this, to talk about the opposite side of that story. You're coming in as a communication expert. You're working with CEOs literally all over the country, and I walk into that group. What was your perspective of that situation?
The opposite of consistency, Forrest, is shattering expectations. When you lead CEO groups all over the country, all over the world, literally, the expectation of a CEO is probably some 50-year-old overweight white guy. And so when an African-American woman, a millennial, someone who's super in shape comes into your CEO tribe, they shatter expectations because that's not what the stereotype is. Now, the stereotype has changed through the years, but we met about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And as recently as a decade ago, that stereotype was pretty solid. My first impression of you, you walk in the door and I do a double take. I do a head turn because you're movie star handsome. Whether you like it or not, you're movie star handsome. You're drop dead gorgeous. You're in incredible shape. You're better than incredible shape. And so immediately you're going to get my eye because you shatter expectations. So I'm looking forward to meeting you. I'm excited to meet you. I'm saying, I'm going to love this guy. He's going to bring so much juice to the meeting. You don't come say hello. You don't introduce yourself. You go right to your seat. You take out your phone and you kind of disappear. So I'm thinking to myself, these micro messages, this behavior looks like this guy is superior. This guy thinks he's better than the rest of us. He thinks he's too cool for school. And I said, well, I hope I'm wrong about that. But then as the meeting continued and you continued to be deeply involved in whatever was in your lap, I said, well, maybe if I try humor, lightening it up, we'll get this guy to relate. You weren't smiling. You weren't making eye contact with me. You were stoically listening. So all the micro messages you were sending were telling me that this guy was not here. And yet underneath, I had this visceral sense that you were somebody extraordinary. And not just from your physical appearance. Remember, physical appearance is the first moment we have when we meet with a person. Mm-hmm. That's external. Okay, I don't know whether you're good. I don't know whether you're smart. I don't know anything. I just know you're pretty. All right, so that's a beginning. Well, I just started to sense there was something more than that with you. And I felt like there was a dichotomy, that I just could not believe that you were this person that your micro messages were sending. And of course, I was right. You needed to be aware, though. If I really loved you, which I did pretty instantly, you needed to be aware that you were bringing those micro messages to the table and that the authentic Forrest Walden was not being projected to his peers or to this person he was meeting the first time.
And that began an ongoing relationship of you. You know, you've worked with me on speeches. I've hired you as a coach for communication. I consider this podcast to be an offspring of your work in my life. So thank you for that. This is not naturally my forte to communicate in these ways, but I have found the more I have worked on, because I'm 100% introverted on the wiring scales on any test I've ever taken. But that doesn't mean I can't be a great communicator. And I have to be aware of listening stoically and the micro message that I send. And so that's really your whole approach to life is, and what I love about it is the more you are aware, the more you can give and receive what you call TSP. And so we'll get into all that. I don't want to spoil it. I want to start from the beginning, because you really have an incredibly interesting path to even be in the situation you're in, to work with CEOs and politicians and speakers. And so let's tell the listeners a little bit about how you got to what you're doing now.
Fireman's son, blue-collar family, suburban Boston, very middle class. Neither of my parents graduated from high school. I'm the middle of three boys, both my brothers superstar jocks. I'm the geeky, nerdy intellectual in the middle. Did my undergraduate work at Brandeis University, which is a hoity-toity liberal arts university in Boston. Majored in theater arts and spent the first 10 years of my career as a secondary school theater educator. I was a high school drama teacher, and that floated my boat. I just loved making a difference in kids' lives, and I'm as proud of anything I directed with high school students as I am with professional theater, film. We it was tough love. We were cranking it out. I could have done that forever and, you know, retired after 50 years of teaching kids and get the gold watch. I felt like there was something else I had to do. There was that I needed to express my creativity more. I needed to do something a little more unselfish, or maybe even, you know, in terms of spreading around the world, or maybe something even more selfish, that I needed to have a more professional expression of my creative arts. So off I went to graduate school, and I got a Master's of Fine Arts in directing at Boston University and began a successful career as a professional director, actor, artistic director of theaters. Artistic directors, like the CEO of a theater, that's the person that hires the directors, the actors, the designers, mm-hmm. picks the season. It was in that I started developing a company that I called Michael Alasso Personalized Entertainment, where I started writing shows for corporate and private clients and performing those shows, hiring other professional actors. And I was giving curtain speeches. So what a curtain speech is, you stand on the stage and you talk about the play and you try to sell subscriptions to your theater. Mm-hmm. And in your audience are politicians, lawyers, business people. Well, those folks started coming up to me and saying, hey, can I have a piece of what you're doing? I wanna have this skill. And at the same time, I was doing these entertainments in the corporate world, and the CEOs of these companies that were hiring were saying, gee, this is kind of interesting, the way you interact with us, the way you interview us, gather material, can you coach us on that? And I was, these double avenues kind of led me to a place, the kingpin of this was a man who was the corporate shrink for a major utility company in New England in the UK, and his daughter had been one of my high school students. Hmm. Back in those days. And he had watched me run rehearsals. And he called me one day and he said, look, I'm running out of things to do with my CEO. Could you translate that coaching skill that you did with my daughter, Sabrina? to the CEO of my company, well, Forrest, you know me. Why am I here today? I have trouble with the no word.
That's right.
I said yes. HR brought me in. They interviewed me in straight back chairs for 3 hours. At the end of 3 hours, they not only gave me the CEO to coach, but the 9 vice presidents in line to be the CEO. One of those people were in a group called Vistage, which you alluded to earlier. He hired me to go to his Vistage meeting to give him notes, and the rest is history. And here I am, 1,756 Vistage meetings later.
Wow.
Thousands of clients like you as a result of Vistage, some of the finest people in my life like you that I've ever met, I met through Vistage, either 1 degree of separation, 2, 3, 4 degrees of separation. That was my path to how I got here. Somewhat serendipitous, with the exception that what my dad taught me is that everything you do with quality. If you say yes to a job, if it's washing dishes, if it's walking an old lady across the street, you do it like your life depended on it. And I've lived that adage, and that brings other good deeds, other good work.
It does. And, you know, I'm always impacted when I'm around you, but especially when I'm hearing you do your thing. I mean, when you're doing you on your best day, it's convicting, it's reminding, it is inspiring. So could you give us maybe just some of your top takeaways? I know you've got a sheet of like 40 things that you cover, kind of an ad hoc message, depending on what's going on in the group. But if a listener was wondering, like, how could I up my communication game today? What would be like a top 5?
Yeah, let's do a top 5. That's a fair question. Start with energy. How do you show up every day? How do you walk in the building? What's your prep to get in the building? So the number one secret weapon on my list is energy. And I think it's so important. I write it 3 times. I write it first. I put an exclamation point after it. There was a survey taken of leaders in our country asking you all what it is that you look for and the people that you surround yourself with. So multiple choice. You could say education, experience, honesty. Number one by a landslide for us was energy and enthusiasm. We all want to be surrounded by a life force. That's number one. So what I think we all need to do is before we walk in the building in the morning, we have to say to ourselves, it's showtime. It's showtime. And then we walk in knowing that every eye is on us. Every eye is watching what we do. Every ear is listening to what we say. Whatever we have to do to prepare for that, you know, whether it's I do vocal warm-ups, I pray, I do a physical routine in the morning. You know, I have a whole preparation that I do in the morning that gets me going. And I bring that in so that it's a continuation of life. We always say to actors, for us, the average audience member thinks the actor takes the character when they walk on the stage. Not true. We take the character long before we walk on the stage. That Maria Callas, the great opera singer, says that opera happens long before the curtain goes up. Yes, indeed. That's what I'm asking of business leaders. That's number one. Number two, what you were talking about earlier, focus and concentration. It's what we call in theater being in the moment. You athletes call it being in the zone. Focus and concentration. Freshman year of any acting program for us would be all about focus and concentration, how you stay in the moment. And so when you go to your phone in a meeting, my presumption is that you're not focused and concentrated. You look out the window, you're not focused and showing me concentration. You talk while I'm speaking, that's a lack of focus and concentration. Everybody wants to be seen. Everybody wants to be heard. And if you go to any of those technologies, if you in this interview respond to the ambient noise outside instead of paying attention to what I'm saying, someone with less confidence in me, i.e. anybody, is going to lose their mojo. Mm-hmm. So number two, if you in this top 5, I pick focus and concentration. Number 3, micro-messaging. All those things we do that, again, you alluded to earlier. Do we smile? Do we not smile? Do we wear a blazer to work? Do we not wear a blazer? Do you wear makeup? Do you not wear makeup? Do you fix your hair? Do you not fix your hair? Do you have sneakers on? Do you have cool shoes on? Do you drive a Harley into the parking lot? Do you drive a Porsche convertible with top down music blaring? Do you have tats on your arms? Do you have tats on your arms and have gigantic biceps? Do you have tats on your arm and have gigantic biceps and wear a shirt 2 sizes too small for you? All those things are micro messages. Taking notes is a micro message. Taking notes in a hard covered book is a micro message. Walking into Iron Tribe in the morning and saying hello to people by name is a micro message. Walking into Iron Tribe in the morning, go directly to your office, slam the door, don't say hello to anybody, is a micro message. So the third thing would be a heightened awareness of all the micro messages we send. psychologist, cover story psychology today, 60 years ago, Forrest said that only 7% of communication is content. The other 93% is micromessaging, sarcasm, tone of voice, the clothes, the smile, the look, the sarcastic remark, all those things are micromessages. Fourth is what you alluded to earlier, TSP, and I love that you snuck that in and you didn't define it. See, we all know TSP with a period after. It's teaspoon in a recipe. It's, for me, what TSP is truthful, specific, positive feedback. So, Forrest, look at the word feedback. It's a compound word. First word's feed. Teaspoon. Truth, specificity, positive thinking. I believe that great leaders, great parents, great life partners are beauty gatherers. So I believe we go out in the world, we gather beauty. So you have to gather beauty about Mindy when you go home at the end of the night, at the end of the workday. You're not done at the end of the workday. That's act one is done. But you got act two. And act two is more important than act one in any play I ever saw. So you go home, you have Mindy and the kids. Where's the beauty? Is something in the house new? Did somebody do something for you? Did somebody greet you in a special way? If you walk in with on your smartphone and go sit on a couch and open the snail mail, get a snack, and then go say hello to everybody, well, I would argue then maybe your family isn't your priority. So you have to decide that. That's a decision you make.
And that's really back to number one.
It really is.
Right? So you got to gear up to show up to work, but you also have to gear up to show up at home.
Bingo. And you're so smart for us because all of these things overlap. Mm-hmm. One complements the other. And so if my eyes are open, if I'm listening and observing, I can gather the beauty, but that requires me to go right back to number one. If my energy is down, I can't do that. If I'm saying, oh yeah, my back hurts. Oh yeah, I have a headache today. Those are obstacles to your success. Those don't help you achieve your success. Mm. And fifth and final is having objectives and super objective. So objectives, my objective when I first met you was for you to walk out of that meeting with a minimum of two ways to upgrade the way you communicate and lead. So I have an objective for every meeting that I do. Objective in theater language means what I demand of another person in an interaction, desired result. We also have in theater a thing called a super objective. So a super objective synonym is, what is my vision? What do I want on my tombstone? And I think you know what mine is. It's servant leadership. I want every human being I meet to be better as a result of having met me today. And I think that all great leaders should have a piece of that. Just think about it. If every interaction you had, I'm talking every single one now. You're firing somebody, you're dealing with an unethical retail situation, you're punishing your child, you're ordering a latte at the coffee shop. Every single interaction, that human being's going to be better because they interacted with you today. Can't think of how much better all those communications would be. So if you force me to pick five, those are the five I'd pick today.
That's awesome. We could keep going on there, but I want to tie that into the thing I love about what you teach and the way you live is you always say, on one hand, I have all these things and it's the right thing to do and it's to treat people with respect and it's to build them up and love others. But on the other hand, I'm a businessman. And what I know is by doing these things effectively, it leads to better leadership and more business. So I know you've got tons of stories. I've heard you tell some about meeting people on the plane and doing this and ending up with a client, even though that wasn't your intention. Talk about balancing those two things and what it leads to.
Yeah, you know, it's not for me to question what your motive is, but I know if you've chosen to be a leader, you got to do these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm very, very impressed that you remembered the two hands, because that's kind of a subtle thing. I don't always say that. That's great retention on your part. You know, for example, number 25 secret weapon for us is using names. Now, Dale Carnegie says the most beautiful sound a person can hear is their own name. So when you call a person by name, that's a major micro message. It makes them feel valued. It makes them feel honored. Now, I do that at airports. I do that in restaurants. So an example of your two hands is that, all right, I call Jose by his name at the restaurant. Yes, I'm honoring Jose. I make Jose feel valued. All right, if I don't have an altruistic bone in my body, I don't think I'm a good person. Watch how your service gets better when you call. Watch how much higher you go on the upgrade list at the airlines when you call Constance by her name at the desk. Yeah, when you start treating people with respect and dignity, maybe you're not a good person, but you get results, and leaders are supposed to get results. So it's a tactic to get results. Now, it has to be authentic. you can't do this and make things up. It has to be authentic. But I'm okay if your authentic reason is to impact the person so that a result happens. If you're calling your employees by name so that they perform better, I'm okay with that. I'm also okay if you call people by name because you deeply respect them and you want them to feel like distinct individuals in God's universe. That's obviously a purer reason. But in the meantime, if you can't do that yet, maybe start with the first thing and maybe you'll build to the other thing.
And it's not necessarily an either or. It can be a both and, right?
Definitely.
As you master it.
In fact, it probably is.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. Well, talking about using names, another good story is that first day I met you, I think I conned you into a dinner, free consultation, if the truth be known, and you were happy to do it. You were pouring into me. And I remember we got done with dinner and you said, Forrest, what's our waiter's name? And I said, I have no idea. And you said, of course you have no idea. You've hardly looked at him all night. You've practically treated him like your slave. How do you know he's not your next client at Iron Tribe? And so interactions like that, although very abrasive in the South where we don't do a lot of direct communication, I will tell you, I don't text anymore without using someone's first name.
Awesome.
I always ask, sometimes the waiter doesn't even tell their name, I ask their name. Just this weekend, Minnie and I were in Atlanta at a marriage certification, and the girl never introduced herself. I said, what is your name? She said, Genesis. I said, oh, you know, beautiful name, means beginning. And so, I mean, those are little tiny things, but they have changed the way that I interact with people. And now, I have a long way to go, but these things are powerful. You know, and a lot of times what's easy is easy not to do.
Well, it makes you pop.
Yes.
See, leaders have to pop. And that's why I loved what you're doing today is so beautiful in this interview. You're being incredibly vulnerable. You're talking about where you made mistakes. You're talking about flaws. You're talking about your introversion and that your introversion doesn't give you an excuse not to be a good leader. Most leaders are introverts. You're part of a big club. Your ability to look at that and say, no, I got to get better, speaks to your excellence. And your leaders... I'll repeat, leaders have to pop. So introvert from introvert. You know, it's you're parenting at that very difficult age. When those of us who have parented kids grade 6, 7, 8, it's a very difficult challenge. And of course, I taught that age level for so long. And I have my two that I took through that. And now I have grandkids going through that. It's so difficult. And part of the problem is that kids want to blend. They don't want to pop. They want to wear the same clothes as their peers. They want to speak the same language. They don't want you to say hello to them at the mall. They want to disappear. Well, the problem with that is that's antithetical to leadership. Leaders have to pop. So I would argue that when you text and use someone's name in the text, someone's noticing that. Mm-hmm. And they might not say, ooh, Forrest Walden uses my name when he texts. But they feel something different. You're popping. And that's what we want our kids to do. And that takes courage. You know, it's creativity, courage are very related. If a kid's being beaten up on the playground and all the other kids stand there and laugh, we want our kid to be the one to say, no, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That's courageous. It's creative. It makes you pop. It makes you outside the norm. Why do you think I work out at Iron Tribe? When I work out at Iron Tribe, I pop because I'm the oldest, fattest person there and no one makes me feel bad. Everyone only makes me feel good. You gotta not be afraid to pop.
Well, for the listeners who can't see him, he's furthest thing from fat. So now he's being self-deprecating. Like, seriously, Michael, we could do this for the entire show, but I want to get into more of what makes you tick as a leader and how you've been so effective in help. I know I am one of countless stories that your life has touched, just even some of my coworkers over the years that you've touched, and no telling how many others. So you mentioned earlier 1,752 Vistage presentations, which means a different city in a different state, a ton of travel, but you're impacting anywhere from 18 to 20 CEOs every single time you give that talk or one version of those talks. And then on top of that, I know you're doing a ton of other things. So just give us an idea of how many clients you've had, how many you're actively serving, if there's any high profile ones that would be kind of cool. What does your world look like there?
Thousands of clients, really, because remember, and my high-profile clients, I don't like to say names because
sure.
I'm not sure. A lot of times, for us, I'm one-on-one coaching. Sometimes I'm even ghostwriting for people, and often they, you would think it wouldn't be, that it would be, you sing the praises of having a coach. Some people are embarrassed that they have a coach mm-hmm. and they don't like talking about it. So I always want to protect people's discretion. But the range of the work I do is everything from one-on-one coaching to the workshops you described. And I'm also doing a lot of keynotes. So sometimes I'm speaking to 900, 1,000, 1,200 people in one moment. And so I've now spoken in 48 of the 50 states, all but two of the provinces of Canada, England, Scotland, Wales, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Mexico. So I'm traveling. And that is a challenge. It's all fun. It's always designed to get people to be better and always to get people to walk out of there with a minimum of two ways to upgrade the way they communicate and lead. That's always my objective. And then put whatever nuance given the setting. Because sometimes I'm going back to a company for the seventh time. Mm-hmm. And now we're adding a new layer to that. Now we're working on formal presentations. Or now we're doing a straight up improv workshop. I've been there six times. We've done the secret weapons. Now we're going to do an improv workshop to push you completely outside your comfort zone. So in addition to our usual objective, today's objective is to access creative energy quickly, to get you to go outside your comfort zone freely, to express yourself verbally and non-verbally in a non-judgmental environment. The beauty of my job force is I'm doing something different every day. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave you today, and I have a one-on-one coaching via telephone this afternoon. Tomorrow I'll have a key executive group. Friday I'll be in Florida with a company that's my second time with them, but the first time was 2 years ago. And 25% of the room will be new. So I'm challenged by mixed experience. Mm-hmm. Do I go to part two? Do I do part one? Do I do a hybrid? How am I going to handle that? And as you very smartly said, I do play the room and I look at the needs of the room. I have to come in prepared. So I believe that structure frees creativity. So I come in overprepared, ready to read the room, and away I go. So that's what it is.
Well, I want to comment even on what you just mentioned with the mixed experience. It's easy for me to sit here and say, well, that's just you because you're a speaker and those. But you're going to turn that around and say, hey, Mr. Leader, Mr. CEO, Mr. Mom or Dad, when's the last time you had a mixed room with mixed experience? Every day.
Every day.
I've got my staff, two of them missed the last meeting. How am I going to approach that?
So if
it's incumbent on you to have all these tools and resources, like if you think you're going to lead, you better learn you've got to master those things.
Absolutely. You nailed it again for us. You're getting it. I call it, the metaphor I use is I have to have a quiver over my shoulder loaded with arrows. And all the arrows need to be sharp and ready to use. I never know which arrows I'm going to pull out in a given day. This podcast, the arrows are all in there. I don't know what arrows I'm going to use. Mm-hmm. I don't know what questions you're going to ask me. I don't know if my answer is going to inspire you to go in a different route. I have to be ready for that. Yeah, we all do it. Thanksgiving's a mixed experience.
Yes, it is.
When was the last time you had the same population at the table every Thanksgiving? And families have rituals. So the people who are new to the ritual, do we make them feel like outcasts as we do our ritual? How do we make it redundant for the people who've seen it 8 years in a row as we explain it? How do we solve that? It needs to be solved. And that's mixed experience is something every single person faces. It's a little piece of it.
Okay. So I want to transition. Clearly, you are an expert at what you do. You're highly proficient. You're traveling. You're speaking to all these CEOs. I want to talk about how Michael shows up in state, in power, every time. Because I got to be honest, after 1,700 presentations, it'd be pretty easy to phone it in. I mean, you've been Tech or Vistage Speaker of the Year multiple times. You get amazing reviews. And it's because every time you live out what you preach, you bring the energy, you focus on every micro message. You are probably the best beauty gatherer that I've ever seen. So I want to talk about across the other domains. This show is all about being a four-dimensional leader. We talked about business. You're highly successful. Let's talk about body. What are you doing to make sure that you're showing up and you can deliver? Because if you lose your body in the process of all this travel, it's kind of hard to pop.
I am so vain. In my head, I think I look like you. So, you know, then I see a mirror and I go, hey, wait a minute, you don't. So, and in my head, I think I'm a good 30 years younger. So my physical being is very, very important to me. And every time I've ever worked out at Iron Tribe, I'm not lying to you, Forrest. It's been It's been such a great experience for me. I learned so much about myself. I always drag my heels coming. Like, it's very hard for me to drag myself here. And every single time when I leave, I feel like I own the earth. I try to recreate that experience every day. I work out regularly. Mm-hmm. I have no trouble working out. I don't have a gym in my home because I do have trouble with that. I do have trouble motivating myself to. I'm not one of those self-disciplined people. I need to go to the gym.
Yep.
But what I'm great at the gym is not socializing. You know, I'm not one of those muscle heads that looks in the mirror the whole time, talks to people, and then does a curl once every 30 minutes. I am there to work, and I work. So I do a combination of a weightlifting and a cardio. And recently, as I'm getting older, as you get older, the body starts to break down. You get injuries. I got tendinosis this year. I hurt my knee. So I said, all right, I'm going to invest in some physical therapy. My physical therapist was brilliant. So in addition to my other workout, I'm now doing my PT workout. So what I'm doing, you know this better than anybody, is to strengthen the knee, to strengthen the ankle, you work on all the other muscles around them mm-hmm. so that I'm not putting all that pressure on it. And I've got this complete workout going that really makes me feel good. Now, these are challenges when I'm on the road. My physical therapist has worked with how to abbreviate the workout if I can't get to a gym, how I can do it in my hotel room. Mm-hmm. And that has helped. He's helped me. It's the goodness of other people. Other people always help me to be better. But I'm pretty religious about that. And my eating, you know, it's a curse for me, Forrest, is I've always been skinny. So when I was a young director, I'd eat a whole pizza by myself, have a peach Snapple. I drank Coke and not Diet Coke. Not only did I not gain weight, I felt fine. I was great. I was alive. I was energetic. I don't know what the magic number was, 40, 45. Can't quite do that anymore. And so I had to get disciplined because I had been so undisciplined. People just, my mom said, eat. You've got to eat more. I was so skinny. So now I've had to, I do protein drinks. So I carry a portable blender with me on the road. So in my suitcase, if you go to my hotel room right now, is a little hand mixer. And I have this little plastic cup. And then I have packets of powder. Mm-hmm. And by starting the day with breakfast that way and not eating the breakfast at whatever event I'm going to is a huge help.
Yes.
And eating lightly at lunch, not going crazy at lunch. And then I eat a kind of a normal dinner. That's when I'm on my A game. And when I get on my A-plus game, I do a cleanse. 1 or 2 days a month, I'll do, instead of the lunch, I'll pull out the power bar and not eat the lunch. When I'm on my C-minus game, I say, well, it wouldn't hurt me to have a normal breakfast this morning. Oh, and mac and cheese and a piece of pie? Well, I'm in the South, and it's banana pie, and, you know, it's barbecue. I should have it to be polite. You know, I can talk myself into anything. And I weigh myself every day. And people make fun of me and say that's not a valid thing. It works for me mm-hmm. because if I've gained weight that day, and I tabulate it, I write it down, I say, all right, tomorrow you got to be better. And if I've lost weight, then maybe the next day, if that's a day that someone's birthday and there's a piece of cake and I'm going to be rude if I don't eat it, I do it. But that helps me too. And I actually have an app. So I have two houses. So in Maine, the scale in Maine has an app with it. So the app records so I get to see it. There's nothing like looking at those numbers. I'm competing.
No doubt about it. Yeah.
So I look at those numbers and then I'm competing with myself.
I like that because it's immediate feedback, right? And a lot of times what people don't associate is the behavior today, 3 months down the road, they've gained 10 pounds and they don't connect them. You're connecting them right away.
Yes,
you're
sir.
Getting that reward or that penalty. So
yes, sir.
I don't see any fault to that.
Thank you. Good.
I do want to ask, with you coaching so many different types of leaders, undoubtedly you run into a leader who may not be like me and suck at micromessaging, but might be 80 pounds overweight. Do you have to engage in that conversation of, look, we can improve all these things, but buddy, you got to get in the gym. You're a leader.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It's a fair question. Always comes back for us to objective. What's my objective? It's my objective to make friends. Is my objective to not offend anybody? Is my objective to sleaze my way in so the guy hires me? Or is my objective to make this human being better because I love him and I see God in him? Is that my objective? And I would say the second thing is my objective, of course. So that answers the question, doesn't it? I do have to address it. Now, how you address it is the big issue. And all of God's children are different how they respond to feedback. And you learn pretty quickly as you start to give feedback to people, whether they enjoy feedback or whether they're going to deflect, get angry, get their feelings hurt. And when they deflect, get angry, or get their feelings hurt, the big problem is they're not hearing the criticism and it's not going to be taken in. So what's the point? Am I just showing off how smart I am? It's pointless. So the only time I wouldn't give that feedback is if I thought there was no way I could get the person to hear it. So then I give other feedback that might they might connect at some point. What I usually ask that person is, I start by asking, are you happy with where you are today in terms of your leadership? And I make it part of many things, in terms of your appearance, in terms of how you connect with people, what are you working on? And if that person says my appearance and my health, well, then they've opened the door. If they leave that out and they're obesely overweight, they're sending me, that's a macro message, mm-hmm. that they don't want to talk about that. And I would be wrong to then go in there only because they wouldn't hear the word. So what I have to do is show love. I have to show love and respect, tell them about what they're excellent at, see what they're willing to hear that they're not excellent at, and hopefully earn another turn so that I earn my credit so I can get there the next time.
Well said. Very well said. But I'm just looking back over your top five list. And for me, it's really hard to do those things super well if you're not fit. And I'm not talking about being Adonis or a bodybuilder, but respecting yourself enough to show up, right, and be congruent with someone who would have energy and enthusiasm and have focus and concentration. Like, you're displaying it just on how you show up.
I think that's pretty profound what you just said, because that's sort of how I react to you, is when I see how much you respect yourself by how much you take care of your appearance, either consciously or subconsciously, I translate that to how you're going to treat me. Mm-hmm. And the converse is true. If you don't seem to have respect for yourself, how can I ever believe that you're going to have respect for me? I think that's pretty profound. I don't think most people think that way.
And it really goes back to the two hands, too.
It does.
Right? It just makes you more effective. And it doesn't have to be about vanity. That's a great side benefit. Health is a great side benefit.
Yep.
But to be more impactful is
well said.
Okay, so we're going to transition into balance. I know this is a topic you're very passionate about. Your marriage, your kids, you mentioned earlier your grandkids. So many men in particular focus on their business and build at all costs. And a lot of times they burn down their body and they burn down the relationships that matter the most. How have you been able to travel over 1,750 times and keep a strong marriage and have such a strong connection with your kids? What does that look like for you?
Finding the life partner that is your soulmate is first and foremost the most important. Because if you cast... I think of everything as casting force. If you cast your life partner wrong, you cannot succeed at this. The great thing about Peggy is that she gets me. She gets that I'm trying to make a difference in the world, and she is holding my hand right beside me. Maybe literally not on the trips with me, but she supports that. Now, would she like to have me home more? Yes. So we keep working on that. Every year we get better with that. How we treat weekends, how many times she can come with me, how can I arrange a trip so that we figure out that it would be fun for her to come with me, that she would benefit from it. So we try to improve every year.
The house in Maine.
So what we did was realizing that I'm a workaholic, in December 98, I bought a house on the coast of Maine. 3 years ago, we tore it down. And we rebuilt it. I made Peggy CEO of the house. Peggy is a brilliant designer. She worked with the architect and the contractor, custom designed every inch of this house for us. Can't wait for you to come. It's God's house. My pastor came to bless it. He said, this isn't your house. It's God's house. Mm. We remember that. We share it with everybody. Peggy loves it. And so what this great saving thing has happened, that she's actually okay to be in Maine with the ocean and the spirituality of that when I'm on the road. Now, it doesn't mean I can be gone 14 days in a row, but it does mean that it's almost we built this together, so it's a symbol of us. Mm-hmm. And so she has me there in another kind of way. And I know that sounds a little corny, but it really works for us. Mm-hmm. Every couple is different. You have to solve what works for you. what works for you. The more important thing for us, I think, is that when I get home, I'm all in. Mm-hmm. So I don't get home and start doing work. You know, and I'm not perfect. I fail sometimes. But when I'm on my A game, I walk in the door, and I don't care how tired I am. And I'm anal about unpacking my suitcase for us. Like, I like unpacking it the second I walk in the door. I let that anality go for a moment. And I find Peggy usually is just there greeting me anyway. And the first 15, 20, 30 minutes is all about Peggy. Now, we talk on the phone several times a day, so it's not like I don't know what's going on. But maybe I observe something she did in the house. Maybe I observe something she's wearing. Maybe I listen to her about how she's feeling or what's been going on. So I make sure it's all about her at the beginning. And when I'm home, I do have Skype clients at home. I make Peggy completely aware of that schedule. And I always build them around, and my assistant knows how to build them around, our personal things. And, you know, we're bi-religious. Peggy's Jewish, I'm Catholic, so we celebrate a lot of holidays. So this just, it's funny you're asking this, because just yesterday, a client requested a big thing that I wanted to do. It was to speak to a school in Mississippi. It was to speak to a bunch of entrepreneurial students, and you can imagine how much I love those kinds of assignments. I hadn't even read the email yet with the invitation. My assistant Sarah said, Michael cannot accept this because it conflicts with Passover. Michael's wife is Jewish, and this is sacrosanct to him. It's like, Sarah's figured out my voice. And I stick to that. You know, so all the Jewish holidays, I do not work. The Christian holidays, I do not work. These are important events for our family to celebrate together. We respect both parts of it. If there is a family event, when I know when the family holiday party is, everything gets built around that. Sophie's my resident 11-year-old. She's an actress. Her plays, priority. Mm-hmm. Now, I get surprised. Sophie auditions for something, and all of a sudden I've scheduled a trip to Birmingham, Alabama. What I figure out is how I call Sophie 12 times before the performance. They Skype me in after the performance so I can talk to her. I figure out how I can do it, how they can record sections of it. I make it up. The biggest secret, I think, is being 100% present when you're there, not being on the phone. And it's so hard for me.
It is.
You know, because I get, like you, 125 emails a day. And a good chunk of those are business related. Some of it's TSP that I need to respond to, that I'm so flattered that people write these kind things. That's when I have to say, nope. You know, and the good people understand. If it's a month later when I respond to your nice email, people get it. Mm-hmm. And the people who say, well, how dare you? That was very rude. You're not practicing what you preach. You didn't respond quickly to my email. I don't think I've did a good job explaining to them who I am, mm-hmm. if they think I'm being a hypocrite by not answering them. Yeah, I'd like to be all things to all people. I got to prioritize Act Two.
I'm going to go back to what I said earlier with your top five is everything that's easy to do, and those are all, at face value, those seem easy to do, but they're easy not to do. And being 100% present when you walk in, like, that's so easy not to do because there's 1,000 distractions. And if we go back to this, your energy's off, your micro-messaging's off, right, your focus
is off.
I mean, if you're coming in stewing over a work issue and you're typing out an email or still on the phone, like, you're sending a message to those most important to you. You guys are second class.
It's all about authenticity, isn't it, Forrest? See, because people will say to, like, CEOs will say to me, the most important person in my life is my life partner and my children. And they do go home and they're on the smartphone. So the thing I think people forget the most, that when I'm on my A game, I remind myself that authenticity requires intentionality. Ever hear a person say, Forrest, well, I'm just being myself?
Sure.
And their behavior is negative and not very flattering. Really? That's how you define yourself?
I've probably said it.
Yeah, exactly. You have to define yourself at a higher regard. And then once you define yourself as that, you have to be intentional in the behavior. you must be intentional. And the way you define who you are, it's what's your objective. I know your objective when you go home is to heap goodies on Mindy and the kids, to fill their lives with richness, both spiritual, with things, with love. That's really what your objective is, and to make those kids grow to be responsible, wonderful, fulfilled adults. Well, if that's really your objective, if that's your authentic self, you can't walk in doing that. Mm. You've been in arm trouble all day. They haven't seen you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, you're right. It is that simple and it is that complex.
Yep.
If you go back to objective, what is my objective? And you ask yourself, what is your objective? And you just take that little intellectual moment, it helps you to build the wonderful spiritual moments.
And that's a great question to literally ask yourself before you open that door.
Yeah.
Right? I'm tired. It's been a long day. But what is my objective?
Exactly.
To show them they're the most important thing in my life. Yep. Not say it. Yep. Show it.
Be it.
Okay. Yeah. Convicted. Again, every time I'm around you. All right. So let's transition to the final B. Let's talk about being. This is something you and I have talked about a lot over the years. I know it's super important to you. It's part of your presentation. It's one of the things that endeared me to you from the beginning is do you weave this into, and it's back to the two hands, it's back to the way you live, that you want to serve people just like Jesus. He was the ultimate servant leader. And you want to create change in the world because you believe deeply in your Catholic faith. So let's talk about being and how that helps you show up as a leader across all these domains of your life.
I think I should have been named Luke. I think I love Michael because it means he was like God. It's a lot of pressure. Luke really inspires me because, and I'm going to probably paraphrase this, to whom much is given, you know the rest.
Much is required. Luke 12:48.
There you go, my brother. So I never forget that, and I've been given a lot. I am so blessed. My life is so filled with goodies. And so it is my responsibility to give back, and I remember that every single day. The Catholicism is a tough religion to have because of all the controversy that we've all seen over the last 10, whatever many years. And a lot of my Catholic friends have left the faith, and they've left faith completely as a result of it. And I understand it. It's not, even when I was in my lowest point, I was married before. I married my childhood sweetheart, and I thought I was going to live happily ever after, have many children. I mean, this was the girl I lost my virginity to, you know. This was everything. I found out she didn't want to have children once we got married. She was not faithful. I was just like, what? At the same time, my indomitable fireman father, at age 57, got diagnosed with terminal cancer. Mm. He had never been sick a day in his life. Never missed a day at the fire station a day in his life. That was challenging for me. My whole world was challenged. It's interesting about me, Forrest, is that the only thing that did not get shaken, because I was a bad boy during that time, all over the place, I never lost my faith, ever. And I know a lot of people have great stories about how they lost their faith and came back. And those are wonderful stories. We read about them in the New Testament. I'm not one of those great people. Mm-hmm. I'm just an average guy who never lost his faith. So I never went to that place. It always has meant something to me. And I think my parents did a great job with this because they insisted that I have faith when I was little. But once I was in high school, they never required it. It was my choice. Mm. And I think, and the same with drinking, things like that in my family, they never, you know, my dad had beer, wine, we could taste it. I never was all that interested in it because it was there. It wasn't so verboten. And similarly, because people weren't saying, you must go to church, I wanted to go to church. I liked going to church. I got something out of it. You know, I'm challenged by focus and all the stimuli. I like going to church where everyone has a single focus and we're worshiping at the same time. I like that ritual. It's arguably in Catholicism, it's downright theatrical. Mm-hmm. We're singing together. We're, you know, I love it. It's a great expression for me. And I've never lost my faith. I have a profound belief in God. And one of my brothers doesn't. You know, I have two brothers, and one is very devout, the other one isn't. I never make judgments for us. You know, my older brother, he's one of the kindest people on God's earth, and he doesn't go to church. I have people who sit next to me in church every Sunday who are not very good people. Mm-hmm. I never make those judgments. I can only judge what's right for me. And what's right for me is a strong and powerful belief in God and exercising that through formal worship. You know, many people tell me how deeply spiritual they are and they never go to church. I'm not judging them. I judge myself that could never work for me. Mm-hmm. That seems lazy to me. I would accuse myself of being lazy for me. So I love that communal experience. That's why I love being an Iron Tribe. It's a communal experience. I love that experience of worshiping together. And it drives me. The new one, I haven't told you this. One of my clients got me all hot on Jabez. Do you know who Jabez is? I might be saying his name wrong. J-A-B-Z. Chronicles, I think.
Yeah. Old Testament.
Yeah. So what Jabez's thing is that he says to God, oh, I'm not worthy of you, Lord. I'm not like you. I can't go out and do all these great things. And God says, shut up. No, you are excellent. Get out there and do it. You're supposed to be expanding your territory. Mm. You just get out there and work. I don't want to hear this humble thing. Go to New Testament. It says in Matthew, don't hide your light under a bushel.
Right.
Same thing in a way. And so I've been really inspired by this whole Jabez thing because I favor the New Testament and get lazy about the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of been an eye-opener for me that I need to expand my territory. And part of expanding that territory is a strong belief in God. Because if I don't have that strong belief in God, I'm nothing. I don't have that raison d'etre. I believe in an afterlife. I believe in seeing God in everybody. You know, and I have trouble with one of my weaknesses is that I'm triggered by people who don't. I'm triggered by intolerance. Triggered by racial prejudice, triggered by bigotry. These things really bother me, and I have to get better at loving those people and trying to understand them. Mm-hmm. And what triggers me is that I don't understand why people don't see God in everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why countries will go to war over God and their interpretation of God. That's hard for me to grasp. Because mm-hmm. in anything I read in any of the holy books, God is love. And without God, I just don't know how I would exist. It's just a very passionate, strong, no, take that just away. It is a strong and passionate belief. Now, I love what you said, that I infuse it in my presentations. That's risky. That's dangerous.
It is.
Why do I do it? I preach authenticity. What I'm trying to encourage everybody is to be their authentic self. I would be a hypocrite if I didn't include God in my presentations. I hope it doesn't come across that I'm demanding that you believe in God the way I do and believe in God. I have to share it. I have to make it a part of who I am. And you know what, Forrest? I have to say, no one's ever, and people challenge me all the time. People tell me what they don't like. No atheist or non-believer has ever come up to me and saying, I find your God thing disrespectful to me. So I must be doing something right.
Which is interesting because you've been in all 48 states. So it's not like you're just camping out.
Exactly.
Bible bit,
right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, and yeah, that's right. And so either they don't care or they're, but I'd like to say more that maybe I'm doing a good job of understanding that people get that this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And if it's not who you are, respect who you are. I'm not going to make a judgment about you. But I have to be who I am. Mm-hmm. And so if you come to my house, we pray before we eat. If we don't do that at your house, I'm not going to force you to pray, but I'm going to do my own silent prayer. And that's just a little example. Do you follow what I mean? Am I making that clear?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just have one follow-up question. I think it can really wrap up our whole conversation. I want to know, and you've really woven it into everything we've talked about, but how does that belief system and mindset, how does that impact who you are as a leader across business, across body, across balance? How does that undergird, as it were, who Michael is?
If my genuine objective is to see God in you and for us to work together to be followers and to be more God-like in everything that we do, it purifies my objectives. And it makes my actions more dynamic, more excellent. They're all interrelated. Then the energy's easy because I'm doing it because I have a calling. Mm. Then the focus is easy because I'm not I have a one focus, which is to be like our Creator and to live a life that's worthy of that every single day.
Amen.
Yeah, so that's how it's all related for me, Forrest. When I'm on my A game, when I'm on my bad game, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking that you pissed me off, and so I'm going to just let you have it because I'm smarter than you, and then don't you talk. Oh. And if I just take a breath and think for a second, I'll make that behavior better.
Well, I've never seen that side of you in whatever it's been, 8, 9 years of friendship. I always experience you on your A game. You've been on your A game today. I know I'm one of those people who show up in your email inbox and your text inbox giving you TSP just of ways what I've learned from you has overflowed to others. Public speaking, it happens all the time now. Interacting with my waiter, like, you know, I've sent you many messages over the last few years because I want you to know the work you do is impactful. It has impacted me, which has in turn impacted others. I mean, even this show, you're episode 36 and really excited about the direction it's going. So thankful you came on today. Thank you for carving out some time for us.
Congratulations on your success, Forrest. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Tune in next week. We'll talk to you on Tribecast. Got a special guest coming up. Thank you for tuning in to today's Tribecast episode. I hope you gained valuable tools that will help you maximize your life across body, being, balance, and business. If you found value, then make sure to head over to iTunes to subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Every bit helps. If you want to communicate to us, send an email to tribecast@irontribefitness.com. A lot of the feedback I've gotten has been around the subject of if I do any kind of coaching. And I have made a few slots open to those who want coaching in their business and in their personal life. So if that's you, hit me up and we'll talk. See you next week.